Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Real Talks. My name is David Steele, and my special guest, Kyle, is back for this pretty good, exciting episode of Real Talks. So I was up in the air of trying to figure out what to do, because it's been kind of slow here for the last couple of weeks. So there was a pretty big director that celebrated his 68th birthday today. And do you know who I'm talking about, Kyle?
Oh, yep. Jimmy Cameron, James Cameron himself.
Yes, Mr. James Cameron is now 68 years young. And so what I thought we'd do is talk about his filmography and really how much he is one of the biggest directors in Hollywood, not named Spielberg, Scorsese, or Stone. So I think it'd be interesting to go back to see how much he's really changed the game as far as film and, you know, digital and everything else. So what do you remember the first movie you saw off the top of your head directed by James Cameron, Kyle?
I think it was Titanic.
Okay.
I think it was Titanic.
Everybody saw Titanic. I saw Titanic twice in the theater, too. That's why it's the number two or number three all-time domestic movie. It's crazy. Titanic was 1997, of course. Very young Kate Winslet, very young Leonardo DiCaprio. And really changed.
I remember Titanic is such a long film that I remember watching it in the morning, and me and my dad had to pick my mom up from the airport. So like, we didn't finish that movie until like later at night. And that's how long that film took to be finished.
Yeah. No, and mind you, this was one of those movies. Titanic was one of those movies. People forget that. This is before the 3 hour. I mean, I was talking about the other day something else.
Yeah.
This is before the 3 hour runtime. And like, it was a long movie, 3 hours and 14 minutes. I mean, you take out the, you know, 10 to 12 to 14 minutes for credits and, you know, it's a 3 hour marathon. I mean, and, you know, it's one of those things where they say, well, we all know how it's going to end, right? Just, you know, I don't know. I'm curious, have you ever seen the, it's called The Original Kings of Comedy. It was directed by Spike Lee way back in like the 2000s.
No, I don't believe I have.
Okay. There's a funny sequence. So it's the top four comedians at the time were Steve Harvey. It, by the way, it's absolute hoot. You'll be dying. And there's some stuff that's pretty prevalent today. But it's Steve Harvey, D.L. Hughley, Cedric the Entertainer, and the late Bernie Mac.
Oh, wow.
And so there's one sequence where Steve Harvey is talking about the Titanic. Now, this was made back then. He basically says, you know, now, mind you, when I say this, I'm just repeating what he said back in the movie. He says, you never heard about 3,000 black people dying at the same time, and half of us can't swim. We would have tried to, you know, figure out some creative way to, you know, and we'd flip over the table and, you know, put the dinner napkins in the air to get some air into it. And, you know, and the band went down as the ship went down. He says,
yeah.
What black band do you know would be playing when the ship went down? Cool with the gang when I'm in unplugged. Let's go. Come on. You're going to get shocked by that amp. One of the most hilarious sequences. But yeah, he's talking about the Titanic. But it was just unbelievably funny. But that was really a landmark movie.
It's funny you mention like, you know, we know the ending of what's going to happen. But I mean, I think I was so young when I watched Titanic. I believe I was only 7 when I watched that movie for the first time. And I did know that the ship was going to sink. But I mean, even though you know that, that's something that it doesn't really change your perception of the film. It really, I think it is the characters, and that's what we'll be talking about with James Cameron. His characters are so good.
Oh yeah, that, absolutely.
I mean, you're not really caring about the Titanic. You're caring about Jack and Rose in that film. And I think that, I mean, I can remember, like, the first time I watched it, I didn't know what was going to happen to Jack and Rose. I didn't know if they would live or die or not. And now it's almost become not necessarily a meme, but it's become, like, you know, pop culture knowledge that you know what happens to Jack and Rose. So that's the funny thing. I do remember a time when and especially probably you, when you saw it in theaters, you didn't know it either when you saw it for the first time. So I think that's an interesting thing that James Cameron was able to move away from the knowledge of the Titanic sinking and focus it around those characters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That movie was really all about spectacle. I mean, yeah. There were huge set pieces, you know, the design, and it was all about set pieces. And you really, what he did with that movie was he made you care about the characters. And we'll get into more of this later, but he made you care about the characters. So when the ship went down, you really wanted them to survive. And it was just for the time. So that made, this is going to blow your mind. The budget of that movie was an estimated $200 million. Now you got to remember back in 1997, that's huge, huge, huge money. It grossed only $28 million its opening weekend. It went on to make $659 million. It is in that top five or top seven. I mean, we were just talking about Top Gun Maverick the other day and how it's actually near Titanic. I mean, I think it's, you know, like fourth all time in earnings. And it went on to make $2.2 billion. And at the time, Celine Dion had the biggest hit, My Heart Will Go On. So that one movie just changed everything. So, yeah, so, but a little bit about Cameron himself. So he was actually born today, August 16th, 1954. As I said, he's 68. He was actually born in Canada, moved to the United States in 1971. So he was about 17. He was the son of an engineer who majored in physics, and he majored in physics at Cal State University before switching to English and eventually dropping out. So that tells you something. He then just drove a truck to support his screenwriting ambitions. That's the biggest thing about LA. Like, you see a lot of actors that are part-time, they're waiters. So yeah. It's like, they want to make it, but they've got to support themselves, and this is how they do it. So he drove a truck, but others will, wait tables. So he landed his first professional film job as an art director. And on Roger Corman's Battle Beyond the Stars in 1980. And then he had his first experience as a director on Piranha 2, The Spawning, in 1981, before being fired. So then he went on, he wrote and directed one of the most iconic movies of the last, I would say, 45 years. And by the way, that's going to be turning 30. 40 in the next coming years is The Terminator. So he wrote that, and then he went on to do a string of other sci-fi films. So you have Aliens in 86, The Abyss in 1989, Terminator 2, Judgment Day in 1991. And then in 1990, he formed his own production company, Lightstorm Entertainment. And then in 1997, he ended up, of course, making the film we were just talking about, Titanic. And this movie, this tells you something. It made all that money, but it won 11 Academy Awards, Kyle.
Wow.
11. And there's only been like five or six movies to do that? Like 10 or more?
It's it's the other films that did that were Ben-Hur and Lord of the Rings: Return of the King. They, yep. I don't know, you could check it, but I think they either made the same amount, they won the same number of awards, or they won like one more.
Return of the King, I believe, won, I want to say 14. That swept it. Wow. That's the only movie ever to go 14 for 14. Now,
if that wasn't even nominated for any acting awards.
No. That was all technical. Wow. That was all technical. So, yeah. And then, you know, a couple years later, 12 years later, he ends up making arguably the biggest movie of the time. And we have The Way of Water coming out in a couple of months, and that's Avatar. Mm-hmm. And so he did 3D technology. And so, you know, he's been married a couple of times and has kids. So I want to run through a couple of these, like, from this just tells you, when you talk about, as somebody we know actually says, a murderer's row of movies. Yeah. Let's just go through some of these movies because it is unbelievable. So in 1984, The Terminator. Would you say, I don't know. Would you say Arnold really wasn't a big star back then? Would you say? What do you think?
No. If I remember, do you know when Conan the Barbarian was released?
I want to say it was 1980. I believe it was. Yeah, I think it was 1980 because Red Sonja got released in 1981 or 82. So it was early 80s.
So he was in Conan first, and I would assume that is when he had his breakout.
1982 moment.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. And then I think that it was from Conan that they put him in Terminator.
Actually, in 1984, he was in Conan the Destroyer. So I guess Conan the Barbarian was so good back then that they said we were going to make a sequel. So, yeah. So finish your thought real quick.
Yeah, well, so he was in Conan, then he did Terminator. And, yeah, I would say that was when he really, you know, became the biggest, like, star in Hollywood, not named like Sylvester Stallone. I mean, he was the action star. Arnold was the action star.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Like, he just, see, he did two pretty big movies back then. Arnold.
Yeah.
You know, he did The Terminator, which everybody remembers him for, and Conan, and so it was like, what? Okay. Kind of off topic. I think I touched upon this the other day. There's another year, a couple years later, for another actor. And I'm talking about Tom Cruise. 1986, mm-hmm. he did Top Gun. And mm-hmm. everybody, I mean, that was what propelled him into being a superstar. But he did a little movie that Martin Scorsese directed with Paul Newman. It was called The Color of Money.
Color of Money, yeah.
Love that movie. And that was supposed to be a direct sequel to The Hustler, mm-hmm. Jackie Gleason. But it was an amazing movie. And there's another example of somebody that does something, The Terminator, and it's a huge hit for him. And then he does something off, you know, Conan the Destroyer, and people just like, they put it under the carpet.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, The Terminator was that good. Then a couple years later, so this movie, I think, I would categorize this as one of the sequels that are better than the original, and for a multitude of reasons, and it's Aliens. I just think that, for what it's worth, Aliens was so... First of all, you had never seen like creature like the alien. Still scares the daylights out of me. That's the one thing in like Hollywood. It was just scary. But getting back to my point is, you had a strong female lead, and Sigourney Weaver. You can, you know, there's a couple of, you know, you had the maternal instinct when she was saving Newt. So it was kind of like her daughter, you know, and that's the big scene where, you know, at the ending, where it's, you know, she fighting the mother alien and it's get away from her, you. You know, that's the scene that everybody remembers.
And it was the reunion, what we would see in his first three films, which was his recurring actor, Michael Biehn, that would show up in the first Terminator as Kyle Reese, in Aliens as Hicks, and in the next movie we'll talk about, The Abyss, he was also in that film. So you see how, I mean, then we have Sigourney that ended up starring in Avatar. So James Cameron, what was very interesting about his film, like many other directors, he does like to reuse the same actors and play with the same people, but he gives them all different performances. Grace Augustine in Avatar is very different from Ripley in Aliens. And I mean, just look at Michael Biehn's character in Terminator, even look at him in Aliens, very different character from The Abyss. And that's, I think, another great thing about James Cameron is how good he is with his actors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's, and to be able to get different performances out of your actors such as that. And by the way, some of the biggest movies is amazing. And that just goes to the content of the story and everything else. And you just was the perfect segue to The Abyss, 1989. Ed Harris, and you know, and that was just, that was an amazing, he loves, you know, that underwater, that, you know, sci-fi type of feel, type of role. Truth be told, I haven't seen it. However, from what I understand, really? It's an amazing movie.
I have to tell you, David, that is the most recent James Cameron film I watched. I have not seen Piranha 2. I did not know that he directed that film until a couple of days ago. I had originally assumed that I had seen all of his movies, and then I find out about Piranha 2, and I'm like, oh, really? Well, that I gotta watch that before Avatar The Way of Water. But The Abyss, I watched for the first time a couple of months back. And believe me when I tell you, that is one of the best films I have ever seen. And it is, I mean, almost all of James Cameron's films are like in my favorite movies, whether it's Avatar, whether it's Terminator, Terminator 2, even like Aliens, which I've only seen Aliens one time. But with The Abyss, man, once again, we want to talk about actors. The performance that Ed Harris gives in that movie is unbelievable. It is just, like, there is a moment in the film, I won't give spoilers away, where he essentially has to perform CPR on a character. And it is a harrowing performance. And the actress in The Abyss. I don't know if you could pull her up, but
yeah, I forgot her name. Mary Elizabeth Mastriano.
Yes. She is so good. And I think we can get to this point too in terms of James Cameron. The Abyss is a landmark film in visual effects. It is the first, I believe, it is the first film utilizing a fully CGI like humanoid character, and that is the quote unquote alien in the film. And to this day, the special effects and visual effects on that model look amazing. I mean, I would say that if you look at the first Terminator film, and I believe it was practical effects, it is Stan Winston's Terminator that he created. It has aged a bit. I will say it has aged. It's not as, and it's funny because like usually practical effects don't age as well, but like sometimes like you look at the original King Kong and you look at some movies that were done like a Clash of the Titans from the 80s. These films, they do have some dated effects, of course, but The Abyss, oh wow, like even today I was watching it on DVD, it has not aged. It's also another long film. That's another thing about James Cameron movies. He loves long movies. I don't know what the shortest film he's ever made is. It might be the first Terminator, but I mean, The Abyss is, I think, nearly 3 hours long, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Actually, it did win. So to your point about effects, it did win best visual effects. So it did win an Oscar.
Well deserved.
Yeah. So, and so that was, yeah, The Abyss was 2 hours and 20 minutes. So, I mean, that just tells you something right there. But getting back to that, so a couple years later, I mean, when we were talking about, like, great films, I mean, so we've already established Terminator. We just established The Abyss or Aliens. Now we go to The Abyss. Then, a couple years later, he comes out with another sequel that I would argue, and I think a lot of people would agree, that is better than the original. And that's Terminator 2. And it's just an unbelievable... You want to talk about, you know, enhancing visual effects and how... unbelievable technological advancements for the day. Yeah, Terminator 2 is just, you know, and the other cool thing was we saw the human side. You know, we saw John actually try to humanize the Terminator. So, spoilers, but it's been out for 30 years. But if, like, when we see him, you know, make the sacrifice and die, and he holds his thumbs up, you're emotional about it. And it's like, wow. So, I mean, those four, any other director that would have those four films would just call it a career. Like, done. Okay. Thanks for coming. But he's just getting started, you know? And then, so for a long, you know, then a couple years later after that, he works with Arnold again on True Lies.
And to this day, people consider that to be one of the best action comedy films, even romantic comedy films. And it still rings. I haven't seen True Lies since I was, I want to say, like, 8 years old. Like, it's been a long time, and I have to go back and revisit True Lies because, I mean, the stripper scene with Jamie Lee Curtis, or should I say the pole dancing scene with Jamie Lee Curtis, oh man, that is one of the funniest scenes.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what the film is memorable for. You know, a very young Elijah Dushku's, and you know, she plays his daughter. And but yeah, that is an unbelievable movie, and it's for the action, for the comedy, and that's what made it work. And there was a little bit of drama. You didn't know what was going to happen.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger is really good in that film. Like, he does the first Terminator, he has what, like, three or four lines of dialogue. In this movie, he really, it might be like his best acting performance, to be honest. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, he comes across, I mean, it's 10 years after the Terminator, but he's grown as an actor so much. So at this point, he is a perennial action star. Like, he is the guy. So, but And then, I mean, so those five films, the Terminator, Aliens, The Abyss, Terminator 2, and True Lies, that would be like anybody's dream to have that kind of run. And then in 1997, what we were just talking about, he does Titanic. A totally different take. So he's done sci-fi. He's done action comedy. Now he's going to a dramatic flair because Titanic was more for the spectacle. And it was, you know, the big ship in the 1940s. And like we all wanted to care about.
It's more like a biopic too. Like it's based on true events.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing too. I mean, the Titanic actually was a ship that sank. And so he wanted us to care about the characters and everything else and how Jack, you know, Rose fell in love with Jack and everything else. And it's like, wow. And you know, as I was kidding earlier, you know the ending, but you're still enamored with it. So that, I mean, just goes on to make, they had to print money for that. I mean, that's how much money, over $2 billion. That broke records unbelievably. And then a couple, you know, for several years, he goes and you don't hear from him. And then, so in 2009, it's been 13 years. And believe it or not, I still haven't seen this movie. But it's been 13 years after that, and he does Avatar. Which, by the way, broke every single box office record you can imagine up to that point. 2 hours, which you were talking about long films, Kyle? 2 hours and 42 minutes. This is unbelievable.
David, you say you haven't seen Avatar.
No, I haven't.
Will you see it?
I'm going to have to see it because of the way it was. So it actually is making the re-release Labor Day weekend. Along with Spider-Man No Way, so I'm going to have to go see it in
theaters. You better go to that re-release.
Yeah.
I think what would be a good thing to do a podcast episode on the re-release itself, because your first reaction of Avatar is going to be very interesting. Personally, for me, Avatar is my generation. Like, Avatar is my generation's Star Wars. I don't know how many other people my age feel that way, because I don't know how many other people my age really, watched it a bunch. But like, for me personally, I feel like it is, because it is the film when it came out, as you were talking about, just like box office wise, like this film, we had never seen anything like it. Titanic came out before I was even born. And there had been no film from the year I was born, in 1999, to Avatar, which was 10 years later, that had the staying power that Avatar had. And it was legitimately something that we had never seen before. There's a lot of criticisms with Avatar. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's like Dances with Wolves in Space. It's the Smurfs meets Fern Gully. They have all of these fun little criticisms and comparisons people make. But special effects and visual effects wise, it is by far one of the landmark movies. I mean, there's a reason why, if you look at just the trajectory of motion capture from Jar Jar Binks in Phantom Menace to Gollum in Lord of the Rings. But then you get into Avatar, and that is motion capture on a whole other level. We are talking about main characters of a film that are now interacting with each other as if they were real, like as if they were actually there. And one of the craziest things that I still think to myself is that Zoe Saldana, in my mind, gives an Academy Award deserving performance in Avatar. You never see her face, her real face. You see the character she plays, Neytiri's. You see her face from the beginning of the film to the end of the film. And I think that is spectacular how they essentially created a character in motion capture that we would see for the whole movie and now going into the sequels. And I think that you now see how big motion capture has become, whether it's the Planet of the Apes films, whether it is even a movie that I hope we get to talk about since we're talking about James Cameron, Alita Battle Angel. Like, these are movies that now have become a part of just storytelling that people couldn't have even dreamed of back in 1980, 1990.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So, and it had a huge cast, too. I mean, you were just mentioning about Zoe Saldana. I mean, one of your, you told the story the other day about how you had a picture of Sam Worthington in your wallet, you know, and so, like, Sam Worthington stars in that, and so you've got Sigourney Weaver, you've got Michelle Rodriguez, you've got just a huge, huge cast, and so, yeah, and to that point about how much money it made. So the budget of this movie was an estimated $237 million, which back then was still a big, big budget. And opening weekend, it made $77 million. And it went on to – it is the fourth highest domestic take-home of all time.
Yep.
At $760.5 million. But the three higher films, ironically, came out in the last couple of years. But Spider-Man No Way Home at 804, Avengers Endgame at 858, and Star Wars Force Awakens. That tells you what kind of once in a generation that had. And that movie, Avatar, sits at number one all time. It is made, and with this number is going to change, obviously, with the re-release, $2.84 billion. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, with a B, $1 billion. So
now, a lot of people, they like to say, you know, because Avengers Endgame is very close at that worldwide number one spot. It's been lately, you know, one will get re-released and then it will outperform the other and then it will knock one from the top and one will be number two and then vice versa. And sure, the Avatar re-release will happen and then that will be higher. But I think the thing about Avatar and its staying power is that Avatar is very much like the Wizard of Oz in the type of movie that, sure, we've seen this, you know, the tropes that Avatar has in storytelling before and all many types of movies. But the movie connects with people. And I think what we'll see is Endgame is more of a movie of the moment. When you watch Endgame, you're watching it after watching all of the MCU films that have come before. But I think that Avatar will always, at least, we'll see how the sequels do, but yeah. I feel like it will always have like the number one spot over Endgame because it will always be that film that people will continue to return back to and that people will talk about because it is a film of pop culture. It's not a film like Star Wars that has like gotten tons of merchandise and tons of discussions, theories over the years, but they've created a language in Avatar. And the language of the Na'vi is something that is studied. So, I mean, this is something that we will see. I mean, if you look at all of James Cameron's other films, I mean, we've talked about Terminator 2, we've talked about Titanic. These are major, massive films, but I mean, what Cameron created in Avatar, I mean, is really, really something special. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And so this is, you're absolutely right. And while Endgame was the finale of a long journey that everybody went on, and that's why everybody wanted to see it, Avatar was a completely different animal. And it was a completely different technology. And being able to do it, So speaking of The Way of Water, so that's going to be coming out in December. And then, according to IMDb, Avatar 3 is in post-production right now to be released in 2024. Avatar 4 is filming, and Avatar 5 is filming right now. Avatar 4 is to be released in 2026, and Avatar 5 is to be released in 2028.
Wow.
So this is, you know, this is a whole universe that this is what, I'll be honest with you, I think this is what they wanted out of Star Wars. They wanted it completely while we were still this, and you're right about that, Kyle. This could be the next Star Wars. This is because you're going to be following the same characters. It's going to be the same world. They're going to go through different adversities. And we are going to be able to, you know, there's going to be life lessons there, I'm sure. And we're going to see different generations. Now, I'm glad that for everybody's sake that it's only a 2-year, you know, window in between each film, because if it was 13 years, I think people would be like, all right, then just turn it off. And I think there was something to be said too about, you know, coming back 13 years later, because it is so difficult to reignite interest, because, you know, even Star Wars, like the, you know, Return of the Jedi, you know, episode 6 was in 1983. You didn't have Phantom Menace until 1999.
Yeah.
And then you didn't have Force Awakens until 2015. Now, Revenge of the Sith ended, I want to say it was 2004, 2005, but it was another 10 years.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, this is going to be a really quick turnaround too. And I'm glad they're filming all at the same time.
And what's interesting is that, I don't know if you know this, David, but they've already shot footage for Avatars 4 and 5.
I believe that.
The 4 and 5 footage that they've shot is with the children that are in Avatar 2. And there are reasons why that, you know, when these kids age, it will be different. So they wanted to make sure that these kids were still like the same age. So they shot it all at once. So some of this footage that they shot that was probably shot back in 2017, we're not going to see until more than a decade later. It is unprecedented what James Cameron has taken upon himself. And I think what's also cool is you do mention this Star Wars parallel. And I think that it is a striking comparison, because if you think about it, they're both run by Disney. These are both like Disney properties now. And it wasn't, I think, Disney's like intention to have Avatar 2 take so long. It's not like with, in regards to the other films like Star Wars, they had trouble with George Lucas, whether he wanted to do it or not. But like James Cameron, he's been working his butt off on these movies. And as we've talked about with all of his previous filmography, excluding Piranha 2, because I still don't know about that film, but excluding Piranha 2, I mean, all film is subjective. But personally, he hasn't not only made a bad movie, he has all of his films, I think, are great movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't imagine. I mean, I understand, like, you don't want to go into films with high expectations. But from what we've seen of Terminator 2 and Aliens, we know how good James Cameron is with sequels. With all of this, you know, with all this experience he's had over the years, I think that we are in for something really special with Avatar: The Way of Water. And First off, I can't wait for you, David, to see the re-release of the first
half. I do have to get on the
Avatar train.
I do because I guess you know it never really appealed to me to begin mm-hmm. with, so I never, you know, I never really cared about it. So that was where, but yeah, I mean, it's that he is just one of those directors that, this is going to blow your mind. So as a director, just take a guess. I mean, we've talked about Titanic, we've talked about Avatar. Just take a guess at how much money he's made as a director.
Ooh. I want to say upwards of $4
billion. $6.291 billion as a director. That is unbelievable.
And good movies, too. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It's not really tangent, but I do kind of want to compare him to a Michael Bay, because if you look at Michael Bay's filmography, it is very eerily similar to James Cameron's. Michael Bay makes two like sequel-esque films that he's created himself in Bad Boys. He has a bunch of other like random movies like The Island, and you can say that could be kind of like an abyss for James Cameron. He has a great action film like The Rock that's, you can say, is like True Lies. And then he has his like biopic-esque drama romance in Pearl Harbor. And then he kind of gets stuck in the world that he creates with the sequels in the Transformers movies, which are James Cameron's Avatar.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to see the way those two directors kind of have their own films. And you can say whether or not Michael Bay's movies are good, but like, I do very much like Michael Bay's films.
Believe it or not, Michael Bay has made more than Cameron as a director.
Yeah.
He's made almost $6.5 billion.
And that's because, I mean, with James Cameron, his two biggest movies are Titanic and Avatar right now. I think that could change when his sequels come out, because when Avatars come out, that's going to be the big conversation to have. You know, what will happen after Avatar 2? What will be the consensus? Because right now, Avatar 2, I mean, I know a lot of people were excited for Star Wars The Force Awakens. I mean, I was excited for Star Wars The Force Awakens, but I mean, Avatar, I've been waiting for like 10 years, more than 10 years for Avatar 2. So, and the fact that it's the same exact cast. It's not like, you know, some other sequels they make where it's like one actor returns. The fact that they're bringing back Sam Worthington, the fact that they're bringing back Zoe Saldana and Sigourney Weaver. And I don't know, David, did you hear the announcement that Sigourney Weaver is going to be playing a 14-year-old girl in Avatar: The Way of Water?
No. I didn't know. That in itself, the fact that she's going to be playing a teenage girl is extraordinary, because the fact that motion capture can do that. I mean, we always, you know, kid and talk and banter about, let's say, Thanos.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, the big bad in the Marvel thing, and you go, well, he looks menacing. And then, you know, Jeff Brolin did a great job. And it was like, okay, great. And, you know, but the fact that you're able to change their age like that, that's incredible. So I'm not kidding. They're going to have to print money for this. Now, just for fun, we know how much Avatar made. We know how much Titanic's made, everything else. If you had a ballpark today, August 16th, of, and I know you're not a procrastinator, but how much do you think? Now, mind you, has Shazam, did they actually push back Shazam? Or is that still keeping the December release date?
It still is keeping its
December. So, just ballpark. How much do you think this makes opening weekend?
Okay, so opening weekend, I am saying that The Way of Water, right now I would say that movie makes $180 million opening weekend.
108?
180.
Oh, 180. Yeah. I could very easily see that.
Because I think Way Home made what? 200?
Yeah, 200. Yeah, it made close to 250.
Okay.
It made close to 250.
I think with No Way Home, that was but definitely... I will say this about No Way Home, though.
There was nostalgia there. There was, even though there were the leaks that were out there for a year, everybody wanted to see it, right? And I think all the cameos, for the first time, that was the first film that Marvel said, okay, we're going to throw these cameos in there. And that just blew the doors off the place. So
But I think, see, the thing about Avatar, The Way of Water, isn't how much it makes opening weekend. It's how much it will make in the following weeks.
Correct. I would totally 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah. You look at the first Avatar, you said what, made $77 million opening weekend?
Yes.
So, I mean, to have a movie open with like $180 million today is phenomenal. And I think that it will just build and build. Unfortunately, I think it will kill Shazam. I think that if that film stays in December, I think that film will be decimated. But I do think that, I think I was having a conversation on Twitter with someone about Wakanda Forever and how that's going to do. And I mean, I don't think they will really affect one another because there's about a month difference.
Yeah. So Wakanda Forever is released November 11th. Now, to your point, The Way of Water is getting released on the 16th of December and Shazam's being released on the 21st. I totally agree with you that if Shazam keeps this December release date, they're in trouble. A lot of this is going to depend on, you know, word of mouth and everything else. But I'll say this. I think if you're Warner Brothers and DC and all that, I think you move it to a January or a February release. Because what will end up happening is I think this Avatar, The Way of Water, is going to have the longevity of like a Spider-Man No Way Home or a Top Gun Maverick. I think because if you look at when it comes, because number one, it's Christmas time. So you can have all the kids out. Number two, the last movie came out 13 years ago. People are chomping at the bit to see this.
Yeah.
Number three, you are going to get repeat views. You absolutely are, especially if it's good. And number four, it's Avatar. Like it could rival, I mean, it doesn't have that same moniker like a Star Wars, but it's Avatar. So
I think it's the older audience too, because as I said, I think that the opening weekend will be very good, but I think that the older audience will wait a week or two before they go out to see it. This is what's happening with Top Gun Maverick. Top Gun Maverick is staying in its it's the best, performing film of the year, because I think a lot of the older audience members are going to see it in the following weeks it was released, and then they're going back to see it. So I think that is also another benefit with Avatar is the age, because unlike other films, even unlike the MCU movies, Avatar is literally a movie for every age group. Kids will want to see Avatar. Teenagers will want to see Avatar. Adults will want to see Avatar. And, you know, seniors will want to see Avatar. It is a four quadrant film. And the MCU is also four quadrant, but I think there are more people that are older that would want to see Avatar than would want to see, say, a Doctor Strange.
Agreed.
And also the thing about Avatar, what it has on it, is you only got to see one movie before you see Avatar 2. A lot of people, I think, are under the impression now that you have to see 8 Marvel films in order to see the next one. And that might deter some audience members. But in Avatar, that's not the case. You only have to see one movie. And I think that will be a huge benefit for it, especially with the re-release, which will introduce people like you who haven't seen it to see it. So, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that... And the other thing, too, is like... So if DC or Warner Brothers decided... I think January would be perfect... perfect move to it. I mean, you have Ant-Man coming out in February, the new Ant-Man. There's really nothing coming out. You've got Kraven coming out in January, but I think Kraven the Hunter is going to be one of those movies that, unless you know the character, you know the IP, or you're a comic book fan, you don't really know who Kraven is.
Yeah. I think, though, I gotta say, I still think January... like, I think January... is going to be like the stomping ground for Avatar. Like it will do really well its first couple of weeks, but I think that it takes over January like Top Gun Maverick
took over. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
June. And that is going to be the, I think, win all end all. I will say, though, I remember I saw a rumor that Aquaman could be moving. Aquaman's listed as a March release. They could move Shazam to March for Aquaman, and do something else with Aquaman. It all depends if The Flash releases in June. There's a lot of questions there. I think we can both agree, though, like with Shazam, yes, it's, I think, meant for an even younger audience than, you know, the Avatar audience, but the movie itself, I just don't see families, if they have the choice to see Avatar or Shazam, I don't see families going to see Shazam. I see them all going to see Avatar. And I mean, this could all change given the reviews. I have no doubt that Avatar's reviews will be great. The thing is, if I am wrong, the 1% chance that I'm wrong, that Avatar's reviews aren't great, and if it actually gets, you know, bad reviews, that might help Shazam. Then again, it could work the same way for Shazam. If Shazam gets great reviews, it will work. But then, can you imagine if Shazam gets poor reviews? That would really, I think, hurt it. So, there's a lot of things. But before, I do want to mention, though, there's a film that I think we haven't really talked about in James Cameron's filmography. It's not a film he directed, but it's a film that he wrote, and it is Alita: Battle Angel. And not only, I think, is this film important in terms of, you know, him writing it, but it's a film that he used as a way of, I think, almost testing some of the technology out for Avatar 2. And you were talking about his production company, Lightstorm Entertainment, and that's a film that they worked on that, Weta Digital, they're the ones that kind of work on these films. Or is it Industrial Light & Magic? Do you know who does the visual effects for Avatar?
Visually? Yeah. No, thank you. What ended up happening was, like, I haven't seen Alita per se, but... Robert Rodriguez is a very established director. Cameron, as you said, actually wrote it. And I gotta be honest with you, like, just looking at it, looks a lot. Reminds me a lot of Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I know you really love Ready Player One. I would argue it's better than Ready
Player One. Yeah, no, probably. Yeah, I have no doubt.
At least I will say visual effects wise.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because it's not necessarily the most, you know, original film, but it is really, I think, the VFX on Alita, it's so, so good. And it's another thing, like, I think we didn't mention about James Cameron. It takes him a long time to make these movies. And there are some films. So Avatar was a film that he originally was working on back in like the early 90s. And it wasn't until he made Titanic that he was like, you know what? I'm going to put this on the back burner. I'm not going to work on it because like the visual effects are not up to snuff today. And he did Titanic. And then after that, then he went back and he's like, I always wanted to make this Avatar movie. Why don't I make it now? In 2000, and I think he started in like 2005 or 2006 when he started working on it. And he really finally got that done. Alita Battle Angel is another example. Alita Battle Angel is based on the manga and the anime film Battle Angel Alita, which is a film that Guillermo del Toro showed him in one of their little like movie watch parties they did back in like the 80s. And they watched this movie and James Cameron was so struck by it that he's like, I gotta make this movie. It had a strong female character, which is something that really appeals to James Cameron, and he really was captivated by the story. But then he got kind of busy with Avatar. So what he did was he got his friend Robert Rodriguez to direct Alita Battle Angel. And while he was making the Avatar movies, Robert Rodriguez can make Alita Battle Angel. But he did write it. He did co-write the film. So
yeah, no, that's amazing. I mean, and it just looks visually, from what I saw, unbelievable. So, you know, I mean, like I said at the beginning of this podcast, like, Cameron is one of the best directors that's not talked about, that's not named Steven Spielberg or Martin Scorsese. And, like, we all take, I think it is because that he hasn't put anything out since 2009, recognizable.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if he had come out with a couple of, I won't say crap projects, but mid-level projects, so to speak, then people would be like, okay, James Cameron's on the map. And then he comes out with Avatar 2 and then everything, you know, but it was been 13 years. And that's when people go, ooh, okay. And I think the other thing too is everybody thought it was a myth. Yeah, oh no, I'm making it, I'm making it. Ah, yeah, right. You know, it's kind of like, that's the running joke with, you know, Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. He's going to be making this big sequel about the resurrection, right? And, you know, okay. And he's been working on this for, you know, 15 years. You know, I mean, it'll probably never get made. But the point is, like, yeah, okay. If I'm just going to play devil's advocate for a minute. If that movie ever gets made and Gibson comes out in, let's say, a year or two and says, guess what? I did it. That's going to blow the roof off of that. I mean, because the passion of the Christ, whatever religion you are, whatever creed you are, whatever nationality you are, it is the number one rated R film of all time. Of all time.
Oh, wow.
So that just tells you, I mean, that was such an event back then. It could be another event 15, 20 years later. Anyways. But yeah, no, I'm definitely, you're right. I definitely have to get on the Avatar bandwagon and sit down and actually watch this. And I will definitely sit down and watch this because this is going to be unbelievable. And I really think, and I definitely want to go see it in IMAX too. because I want to absorb it in the best way I can, because
see it in 3D.
Yeah. So
if you like that. 3D.
So it's just unbelievable. But so yeah, James Cameron is just, and the other thing, last thing I'll say is this, like, we as movie fans don't really know what we have until they're lost, right? See these directors pass away and whatever else. It's like, we still have their filmography, but that's like great movies. Like, the day that Spielberg stops making movies, you know, he's got The Fableman coming out later on this year, but like, the day he stops making movies, they're going to be like, oh, really? He's retired? You know, I mean, Clint Eastwood is making movies at 91. Good, bad, or different. But, you know, hopefully he keeps making them till then. But in any event, all right, guys. So let me tell you what's coming up. We have Mob Mondays coming up by the end of August. Yes, it is coming, guys. Trust me, I've just had a boatload of stuff. So Mob Mondays are going to be dropping by the end of August. It's going to be $6.99 a month. I'm going to give you two movies to start with. And they're going to be the 2006 Best Picture winner, The Departed, and Goodfellas. After that, you guys, if you subscribe, you'll be getting one mob movie per week. So the next one after that is going to be Black Mass, starring Johnny Depp, which I loved. I thought it was a really good movie. I mean, I'm partial from Boston, so.
Dick Johnson was really good.
Yes, yes. Then we have the 1983 Brian De Palma masterpiece, Scarface, next week, I believe. And then The Untouchables. So you're getting a lot of good stuff right off the bat. Rewatch Wednesdays. I'm going to talk to Alyssa, and we're going to try and get that up by the first week of September. That is also going to be $6.99 a month. And so that's going to be where she's seen a movie that I haven't, and vice versa. So the first couple of weeks, like, she hasn't seen Steve Jobs. So she's going to sit down and watch Steve Jobs. And then I'm going to sit down and watch Catch Me If You Can. And then I still can't believe I'm saying this, but she has not seen Heat. So, like, yeah. And by the way, I know that you picked up Heat 2 the other day and you said you were about halfway through it. So how close or finishing to are you?
Still about halfway through
it. Okay, so yeah. I roughly how many pages is it? Like 300 pages or
400.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm around 200. I'm around that length.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Really good. It's really good.
Yeah. So she's gonna sit down and watch Heat. So each one of those is going to be $6.99 a month. If you do subscribe, you'll be getting a shout out for every single podcast throughout the month. So not to worry about that. Yeah. And stay tuned, guys, because we're going to be counting down the days and the weeks to probably one of the biggest movies, if not the biggest movie. I mean, Avatar is going to rival it, but Wakanda Forever. And so we're going to go and definitely do spoiler cast for this and lead ups and everything else. So that's interesting that you said it was you think it's going to make $180 million. So you don't think it's going to crack $200 million, huh?
Saying it's because it's still early. I think that right now I'm saying $180, but let's see how the next trailer is received. Okay. And let's see how the buzz is around the time of the movie, especially after the re-release.
Yeah.
Because how much will the re-release make? That will be a huge, I think, question.
Yeah. But that's only going to be out for one weekend. So I don't think that that's really, I don't want to say fair assessment, but it's only one week. I mean, if this makes, I could see it making like $10 or $12 million. I really could because it's, you know, that buzz and everything else. But on the flip side of the coin, if Spider-Man No Way, I'm curious to see how much Spider-Man No Way Home makes. I would almost venture to say Spider-Man with No Way Home might make more than Avatar.
It depends how much they show in the trailers
for Spider-Man. Now, that's true, too. But it, so I don't know all the logistics, but I guess Spider-Man No Way Home has these extra bonus features.
It does, yeah.
So that could be some appeal to some people. They want to go see the stuff that they haven't seen before and everything else.
I will I'll probably go to it. But I mean,
yeah,
it's not going to be like Avatar. Avatar, no. I'm way more excited for that re-release because they're also remastering the film. So will look even more like crisp. Oh, I can't wait. Nice.
So you got those two things coming up, but stay tuned as we count down the days and the weeks to Wakanda Forever. And, And then we got Avatar the month after that, guys. There's a lot of stuff coming up. If you haven't already, and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the follow button. You're going to be getting every single podcast when it drops first. So we're both on Twitter. I'm at Wannabe Rounder. That's WANNABE. RONDER. And Kyle, where can they find you on Twitter?
I am at Arking Kyle, capital ARKING, capital KYLE.
Cool. And I mean, we're hosting spaces all the time. And if you want to drop in, say hi, talk some movies with us, we're definitely up for doing that. You know, follow us wherever you get your favorite podcast, because we're putting out a lot of stuff, you know, every single week for you guys. And Flashback Fridays is another episode that's going to be dropping. So I just did Spider-Man No Way Home, the 15th episode. So we're right in the middle of phase three. And so, next week, it's going to be Thor Ragnarok. The week after that is going to be Black Panther, a $1 billion movie. And the week after that, we got Avengers Infinity War. So you got $2 billion movies in the next 3 weeks. So stay tuned for those, guys. And then this is all going to lead up to Wakanda Forever. So this is going to actually end the week before Wakanda Forever. And then we'll do a preview, and then we'll go talk about that. But one last thing before we go, a Patreon. So if you don't want to follow or whatever, head on over to patreon.com. There's four very affordable levels on there. We've got one for $3, $7, $15, and $20. $7 is a gallon of gas now, guys, in most states. So, you know, you'll be getting a shout out for every single podcast. $15 gets you a mug, a t-shirt, and the shout out. $20 a month, that's, you know, really, really cheap. That's cheaper than most streaming services, or a couple streaming services combined. You're going to be getting the mug, the t-shirt, the shout out. You'll get a 1 hour Zoom meeting with Alyssa and myself, and you're going to be getting one unpublished podcast that nobody else gets. So this is going to be just for you guys. So yeah. Head on over there and support us, because we definitely need your help. Alrighty. So on that note, any final thoughts, Kyle?
You know, I do want to mention, because I was remembering when we were talking about Terminator, I think Linda Hamilton in Terminator as Sarah Connor is one of the greatest characters, I shall say, in cinema, because a lot of people relegate her to female characters. No, characters in cinema. She is outstanding, and I love the way that James Cameron evolved that character from the first Terminator to the second Terminator into a real badass.
No, yeah, absolutely. Terminator 2. Absolutely, absolutely. And you saw the change. And you're absolutely right about this. Yeah. The key that phrase there is strong female characters. And isn't that interesting? Because he does it again in Aliens. And yeah. I really think that's a huge, huge thing. You know,
yeah.
That's the one thing that I think everybody in movie fandom would say we need more of.
All of his women in his movies are, I mean, I am a guy saying this, but I mean, I think a lot of even women can agree. Like, all of his women in his films are really well developed characters. Neytiri in Avatar, she is so good. So yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Cool. No, absolutely. All right, guys, and so thank you very much for listening. And this has been Real Talks.
Take care, everybody.